Hi, Alan.
Hi, Patrick.
How are you doing this week?
Doing good. Doing really good. Doing really good. It's a busy week, actually. A lot of stuff happening online. So let's do more stuff online, like a podcast.
Right. Never stop. You know, once never you're logged stop. In, you're never logged out.
Forever
that's
online.
Pod 48. Yeah. That's the Pod 48 motto.
Mm-hmm.
So
non-stop pod.
Now? Stop pod. Pod me up. Yeah, last time we talked, I guess, yeah, we were just getting to, we'd gone through all of the auditions. That was the key. And all of the girls had been sort of, pushed to their respective classes. We have A, B, C, D, E, and F. There's no
correct.
E. We have A, B, C, D,
go and on. F. Yes. You know, the classic grading system. And, the split's pretty good. It's about 20 per class.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they did a good job. And, you know, they're starting to set it up. You know, they're giving, there's definitely A people in A class that we have not even like seen at all.
We've spent like 2 seconds with total.
Yeah. I mean, literally just some people we've not seen at all. They just don't show
absolutely.
Them. And they're an A. But Mnet is like, yeah, you're an A, but whatever.
Some right. A's are better than other A's, is yes. Mnet's yeah. view on this.
So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into Mnet's still in the driver's seat in episode 3. Well, in our episode 3, in their episode, what? We're going to cover like episode 3 and
late
4.
Late to first half of 3.
All right. Okay. Yeah. You're right. Yeah,
I think like you said this before we started recording. This is kind of Mnet still in control. This is really kind of almost like a vanished future. What Mnet wanted, what could have been if things had sort of stayed the course.
Right.
This stretch is really like these are the narratives Mnet wants. This is how Mnet's going to present it all. This is how if the national producers follow the script, everything's going to move like as each episode progresses.
Right.
And this is like the last time we're going to see that, really.
Pretty much. It's going to go off the rails after this. I want to rewind a little bit. If you haven't followed with the previous episodes or anything, welcome to the pod. We're talking about Produce 48. It's a reality show where K-pop and J-pop idols battle it out to become a supergroup. And most of the J-pop idols, or all the J-pop idols, are from a specific roster of idols called AKB School, or you might have heard of them as AKB 48, which is a very specific type of idol, foregoing a lot of the classic tropes of talent that most people familiar with K-pop would be associated with. And that's the whole crux of the drama on the show. Can untalented yet charismatic and maybe experienced performers battle that with a heavily regimented, trained on dance and singing class of talent in Korea?
Cultures collide. Pop cultures slamming into each other. Confusion reigns.
Pop philosophies.
Truly, yes. This is a sort of fork in the road moment for pop theology, where it's like, which road do we want to go down? Are we more of the trained and disciplined K-pop school, or do we follow the barely trained but very charming AKB philosophy?
Basically, Mnet is also asking, can we have our talent cake and eat our pandering cake, our otaku pandering cake too. They're trying to
two
have
great
both,
days, one dish.
They're trying to have both markets in one group. We'll see if that pans out in the end. Spoiler, it doesn't really pan out that way.
Also, anyone new to the podcast this week, all spoilers.
So
go back to 2018, rewatch the show, and then join us here in the present.
So I wanted to talk about when we're talking about like writing. This is a reality show, but if you're not new to reality TV, if you're new to reality TV is barely real, right? I think in general you can say that, but in specifically like these shows, the Produce series, it's like barely real, and they love to like throw in elements. And I was watching this, and this will come up especially next episode, I think, really. But when I'm watching the show, I'm just like, half of the stuff they're showing the audience, it's like a carnival midway. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like carnival games, right? It's like showing you, oh yeah, it's real. Like throwing the ring on the bottle, like it's totally not rigged. Like, right. Look,
you
look,
can do this.
Anybody can do this. Look, it just fits right over. But it's super rigged. Like, it's just a facile like show to show that like there's some randomness or like actual like democracy in this thing, when it's very scripted, very like even getting before God, if you haven't listened to the last two episodes, you just need to, I can't talk about the whole fucking
thing. What are you doing here?
But even before we get to the whole, you know, vote rigging, mm-hmm. like the actual vote rigging or the vote changing, like the whole just idea of crafting narratives to like push voters towards certain idols that Mnet wants to put money behind. Because this is not like, if you run a company, if you run a media company, you're not going to let people just pick who you put money behind, right? That's how you get Bodie McBoatboat. You can't just do that, right? Bodie McBoatboat is true to
actually trust. You can't trust the masses.
Yeah, you can't just give the keys to the idiots out there.
Right. We've seen this, like, you go beyond just Asian pop music. This was obviously a huge thing in American Idol in the 2000s when, like, they were trying to push, it was Sanjaya, right? Like,
right.
The bad singer.
Right.
And it was just an intentional, like, let's fuck this up.
Yeah, sure. Exactly.
He got pretty far, so.
He got pretty far. And they'll let that happen and get pretty far because, you know, they want people to watch.
Yes.
But they're not going to let him in. It's like the Lelouch thing. They want him on the show. They don't want him to quit.
Right.
But they're not going to let him in. He doesn't want to be in. They won't let him in. It doesn't matter what kind of petition or who says what on the internet, you know. They're not going to let him in. So it's funny when people got mad about the vote rigging and stuff. I'm like, of course the vote rigging makes sense. Like, this is exactly what they wanted. Right.
The milk bottles were glued together, regardless of how hard you threw the softball. They weren't coming
down. Are you surprised you didn't win the huge doll somehow after spending $50?
Don't
Are you going to sue the carnival? You're suing the carnival. You're arresting the carny.
The carny.
That's what happened. The PD is the carny, and he got arrested.
Mnet is Atlantic City.
Which I can't be. I can't be like he's innocent. But I can also be like, you knew you knew what you were getting into.
You respect the grift to a degree.
I respect the grift enough to go to C&J Studio and buy a shirt. And a blanket.
All right. Oh, sweet, sweet blanket. This actually gets to something I wanted to talk about, which is regarding Produce 48 and perhaps Produce 101 in general, the entire series, the merch that was available.
The merch.
At the situation.
Mm-hmm. The merch seems awful, like underwhelming.
Right before we started recording, I was going through a few like random, just like, I guess, third party sellers. And yeah, they're just pretty generic t-shirts. And like, there's like a nice sort of vest with the Produce 48 logo on the,
like,
sort of over your heart. But that's
I was expecting to go. Okay, so I went over, I was in, you know, I go to Korea and go to Japan sometimes. And, you know, I can't, when I'm in Korea, sometimes my friends have day jobs and they can't come with me to the fucking it's like Samsung-dong. It's like in the middle. It's like not. It's on the west side of Seoul or something. You go over there, and it's just like it's that business park. And if they film some stuff there. Like there's that one show, Idol in Star, that's like happens in like kind of a TRL glass building, and there's like people taking pictures outside. Like that's there, I think, because I've seen that like window. But in there's like a little store for produce stuff, and Produce 48 was happening. And I was expecting like you know, they actually show, I figured if they show it in this season, they haven't yet, but they did show it in previous seasons where they go into the merch store and they see all their own merch and they're like, oh my God, it's fun. Oh my God. Cause they want you to buy the merch. Right. But, I was expecting like rows of like, at least like the jerseys with the class numbers and the colors and stuff like that, right?
This to me is the biggest missed opportunity. Go on.
And I was expecting like maybe even like a butt, like every single like 96 of them having just some sort of trinket, or like not even like a specific trinket, but just like a button with their name on it or something, so you could like a, you know, like I like Ike or something, like so you could campaign right. for them. Exactly. Right. And I was like, oh, I'll go and I'll buy. So my one pick from literally audition was Joe Yuri of Stone Entertainment.
You were looking for the Joe Yuri 2018.
I was looking for I was gonna go all in the Joe Yuri thing. I was going in all the Joe Yuri. I was traveling Japan a lot. I was playing this party in Japan, K-pop party called Todak Todak, also known as Liar Liar. And basically I was pushing a campaign for Joe Yuri, even though, you know, foreign viewers can't technically vote, but you can kind of vote, right? You can kind of vote.
It's complicated. Boom. And Alan was at the forefront. I recall having talked to Alan, especially after a specific trip in particular that I think we'll get into. He was indeed pushing this from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. Just like pushing, like, Joe Yuri is the girl. Joe Yuri is my main vocal for the group. I want this, like, kind of, I liked her voice, like, her interesting voice. I thought, I'd watched a little bit of Idol School, and I thought she got kind of shafted there, but I understood why they put her in Fromis 9, because it didn't really make sense. But I thought, IZONE would be better served if it didn't sound, IZONE would be better served if it didn't sound like IOI, you know, if they had, like, a main vocal who was, like, not so, like, preteen or something. And I thought IZONE was in danger of that a little bit, just because so many very young but able to sing trainees were on the show. So I liked her like deeper voice, and I was like, okay, I think this will make the music more interesting if it's her.
You're thinking of the greater good, really. You know, it's not just total self-interest.
No. I mean, you know, I'm a full-grown man. I'm a full-grown man, he says on the K-pop J-pop podcast.
On the K-pop J-pop. Hey guys, we're devoting 30 hours of your life to this show.
I'm here for the music quality. That's what I'm here.
That's
for.
True. That is why we're here.
Now you can question the subjectivity or the absurdity or the Dadaism of my taste, but I'm here for the good stuff. I want deep house. I don't even know what stuff like very, very, very was. I don't know. Bounce.
So speaking of good stuff, you got to the store.
I got to the store.
You're expecting rows and rows of just fantastic merchandise, you know.
At least something personalized is what I was expecting.
But
there was just nothing. What they had. Which the store is strange, because what they have actually is they have like these books, and you look through the books and there's like logos and like things you can print. And basically what the store does is they just print on demand whatever you want.
Huh.
So, but you can't like print something like specific, like I want like Joe Yuri on a shirt or something, right? You can't just like print something cool like that.
Right.
Yeah. It's like these really generic things, just like produce or something, or pick me or something. So I did get a pick me shirt, which is fine, which is not bad. And I got this Produce 48 blanket. I'm going to get it real sick.
Oh, this is an audio experience, but we'll give a breakdown of what the blanket looks like. Alan is bringing something over. Ooh.
Thing.
Oh my goodness. Is that?
This might be the blanket, Patrick's first time seeing it.
This is, oh my god.
I did bring it to the Todak Todak.
Did you hold that up during your set?
I did.
It's coming back to me now. I think the plastic part threw me off. There's like a little plastic, I think you wrap it.
There's a little Velcro wrap, and there's a little plushy produce crown.
Oh, it's plush. Oh, delightful.
A little plush,
nice pink plush crown, kind of the Produce 48 logo, maybe the Produce Series logo, really.
It's kind of like a baseball flag or baseball towel.
Yeah. Almost.
But even like this is like super flit, like not even like.
Well, yeah, it looks a little cheap.
It's underdesigned. It's underdesigned. Like if you look at the logo of the show versus like this blanket, It's underdesigned.
Yeah, it's not. They're not giving you the entire experience.
If they just like goddamn screenshotted the whatever was going on in the logo of the show and just put that on blanket, that would be like five times the value.
Right. This is them kind of settling, being like, somebody's gonna buy this blanket.
It was still the whole thing. I wore it when I DJ'd my K-pop set. I wore like a sweatshirt over my Pick Me shirt, and then I played Nekuya, the song we're talking about today, which is the theme song. And then during the intro
moment, a sort of climactic, you know, real rise in the song, the sweatshirt came off and there it was, Pick Me, adorning Alan's body.
Pick Me. And then that's how I knew Joe Yuri was going to be third overall.
That was kind of his sacrifice to the produce gods.
That was my sacrifice.
I offer myself as communion.
It was really funny. I remember when the final show was happening. And I was actually, you know, I was watching it kind of, but I was also like running a party that day in Taipei. And so I wasn't like able to, I was like, I'll watch it later. It's fine. Like, I don't want to like
stop everything for this.
My enjoyment of Produce 48 was not contingent on watching it as a group at the same time. It was just like, I'm going to watch it. But I was already getting tweets when that was happening, when Joe Yuri got announced. Because it's funny, I'm watching my friends all tweet about it, especially a lot of my Japanese friends who I, you know, do the party with and play the party for. And they're talking like, they're like, oh, like they get halfway through the rankings of the final 12 and Joe Yuri hasn't been picked. And they're like, Hojo, Alan, what's going to happen to Alan? Oh no. And then she gets picked number three. And then they're just like DMing me like, Hojo, go watch. Alan, watch it. Alan.
Right. This
watch.
Is...
And then I
stop
see it.
What you're doing. Go home.
And then I see it and I remember tweeting like in Japanese, it's like, thank you everybody for your hard work.
Oh my god, you're such a professional.
We did it, everybody. We did it.
We'll follow Alan.
It's just like imagine if Bernie won.
That's
like
true.
That.
This
it's
is
like
the,
that.
This
it's like
the closest thing.
Like, yeah, this is my Bernie. I wasted all my Bernie goodwill on Joe Yuri, and then you know Bernie. Sorry, but you know, whatever.
Get a load of this Yuri bro over here.
And you know she's probably rigged into the group or whatever, but who cares?
Who cares?
But rigging her into number three is kind of wild. That's
we'll get
kind of
into
brave.
That. I'm not sure. This is a good place to get into talking about her narrative, which really starts forming in this part of the show. She starts in A class.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just get to the actual
let's go
show
into
and
it,
talk
yeah.
about how let's what's happening in this show. So they announce everybody's class. They're all in the classes, right? So they're like, okay, this is your skill level. So what do you do with your skill level? You got to teach them something, right? What do the classes teach? Well, we're going to teach you how to, our first big test is everybody's going to learn the theme song to the show. Every produce has done this. You know, they have a huge, big theme song. Every single idol from number 96 to number one, or maybe number 93 to number one, depending on what show you're on.
What happens in your
show.
It's
going to be on the stage or near the stage or in front of the
near
stage,
the stage
or
behind
you know,
the stage,
somewhat close to the stage, in the room. Everyone's going to be in the there room while the thing getting performed. And it's going to be sold as a single and everyone's going to get their own fan cam and, you know, this thing. So how the classes are going to teach you how to dance and sing to the song. And, you know, the ones who are shit, who are not good at singing or dancing, they're going to take a lot of work and maybe improve a little bit or maybe not improve at all. And the ones in A, they need to get their stuff right ASAP or they're going to drop out because those are the ones who are going to get the most camera time. It makes sense, I think, from a – like it's a good structure to show these girls who we think have talent, definitely have talent, or these girls who don't have talent, we judged wrong and they actually do. They're just you know, it's like over interviewing or under interviewing. Like I personally get told like sometimes I over like, oh, like, wow, Alan, you interviewed a lot better than you actually work. And that's fine. Maybe I interview as an A and I'm actually a C. That's fine. That's fine. You get an evaluation to figure it out, right? That's totally fine. And so we're doing that. Nice
pink sparkly shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
Until it gets kicked down to the yellow shirt.
I think it's fun. I'm pretty sure in previous seasons, especially in the first season, A class got like benefits that like F class didn't, like better food or something like that they just completely erased.
That sounds about right. I vaguely remember
A class getting certain things that B and C, or like their facilities were better or something like that. But it seems like this season they live together. That's about it, right?
Yeah.
But all their rooms are the same. A has sparkles on their shirts.
That's the big difference. That's the perk this time, is that it's just a better shirt, I guess. Yeah. It's literally just that it has glittery stuff on the back of the big A adorned to the pink shirt.
It might be a heavier, less aerodynamic shirt.
Interesting. Yeah. Has anyone run the numbers on is that an extra, wearing 5 pounds while you're running?
M Snake, what are you doing? What are you doing, M Snake? Sabotaging my A class.
Call the government in, weigh those shirts. Let's compare. Is the F shirt lighter? The exactly. Wonderful gray F shirt that I want to buy.
I wonder if they're in like sports, in like baseball or something. Is there like weight limits to the jerseys? Do all the jerseys have to weigh?
There has to be some sort of uniformity to it.
Because you know, now they just are putting patches and stuff on these things.
Right.
I wonder, like, does a jersey has to weigh less than that, or a uniform has to weigh less than this or more than that?
Maybe if it's within a range, I imagine. Do you remember in the 90s when like they did the, like, it was like the space age uniforms that didn't have sleeves?
Right.
It's like, maybe as long as both teams are wearing the same sleeveless uniform with the hideous logo across the center, like as long as it's equal, maybe it's fine. But you can't like choose to wear that and like, the other teams wearing like...
Could some crazy like new Moneyball-like team could like design just like Speedos? It's just like team Speedos. No, you don't wear anything else. You're just like, you're so aerodynamic. You're going to hit, like, we're going to get 0.25 on our base, on our batting averages across the board. Like, if you could get 0.25 on your batting average across the board, why not wear Speedo? Is there a rule?
Exactly.
Is there a rule against it?
Well, replace the pants with tights. Boom. I want it there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, what if everybody turns into a speed skater?
The dream of entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure there's a rule.
Oh, no.
I'm sure there's a rule. Anyways, we'll put in the annotations. We'll put in the annotations. You can quote it and you can respond.
Please tell us. Hire us to your front office. We'll help you.
I'm definitely putting in the Ken Griffey Jr. Space Age Mariners Back to the Future sleeveless in the annotations. Anyways, back to the show. They're divided into classes.
They get shirts. As Alan was saying, they got to learn, and they begin learning the dance for Nekoya at this point, which is the song. And
they get different classes, but they get the same teachers.
Yeah, their teachers kind of just rotate each day, it seems like. So they get to experience the kind teacher, the cruel teacher, et cetera, et cetera.
Bae and Jung is like the elder statesman of the dance teachers. Her being famous for doing stuff like Kara's viral dance and Abracadabra, and a lot of like just very, some of those older wave like viral dances.
And she's then also have, the strict one. On
she's the strict
show.
One. She's the marm, but she's not really. I think she really bounces. I think she really, especially coming from the first season and the second season, she really bounces her. Ability to marm out with her like affectation.
There's a lot of flashbacks to the first season in these episodes, trying to kind of like play up her sort of like scariness,
right? Because she's actually not that scary in Produce 40.
Yeah. And when compared to what she was doing in season one, where she is kind of like barking at the trainees and like kind of being a little more harsh, this time around she still has a little bit of that edge, but it's nowhere near as like emotionally destructive.
I think that's also because, like we said before in previous episodes, like the trainees in Produce 101 were of like a way higher level than anything else, because that was the first season. That was like these people have trained for like 5 or 6 years. These are like really like pre-debut trainees. Like most of the ones in Produce 101 were like right about to debut. And most of them did debut like right after. Well, in Produce 48, you have a lot of really raw talent, like people from school still like learning. And like, yeah, even like the big companies are sending like their 14-year-olds and 13-year-olds, right?
Right. So there's a lot more
versus
kindness.
Sending their like 18 and 19-year-olds.
Yeah, and in general, I guess they're trying to present a more just like friendly image to this. Because as you said, the first season, there was that feeling of like disparity between, you know, the A class and below. But here we're trying to be a little more like everyone's OK. You're also, you know.
Yeah. And that's not the narrative Mnet is interesting pushing. They're more into this Japan versus Korea narrative at this point.
Yes. Yeah. Which is so still being understated heavy at this point.
Yeah. So yeah, there's Bae Yin Jung, and there's, I like how they flipped it with Mei Jae, who's from the 1 Million Studios, and that's like more the new school type of dance teacher, right? More into the hip hop, street dance kind of styles, which is just not Bae Yin Jung's like thing. And then you have like the real balance in between with Choi Young Jun, who's the male dance teacher, and he's like kind of my favorite teacher in this whole thing because I feel like he just loves K-pop.
Yeah, it's like you say, he seems passionate about what he's doing. He's not overly like, he's trying not to be the center of anything, if that makes sense. He is very, he seems very focused on educating. He's very like scholarly in that sense.
He's also like really bad at describing what he wants. And then really, so he just like ends up dancing it.
Right. Yeah. He's like,
he's like, how do I, you just do it like this. And he just like does like the super femmy, like, girly dance, and they're just like, wow, that was amazing. Okay, we get it.
And then they get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like, it's funny during the actual like performances, they always cut to him and he's just like singing along and doing the dance with it. He just loves the show.
Yeah, he's just
really into it.
Just into it. Yeah.
And then the vocal trainers are Soyu from Sistar again, and Lee Hunky, who I talked about before as being like the real host. He's like the real host, but Lee Hongi is stellar throughout the whole
season. He's great in this episode too. He's once again sort of flexing his Japanese ability and charming everybody.
He's got the bilingualness, and he's got the like just the effervescent love for every single trainee that Lee Sungi just doesn't quite have. I like how they like in these episodes they finally like introduce him to the trainees. And they talk about like how he's like a superstar, like a international, like a well-known in Japan. I have no sense of that. Is he really well-known in Japan?
I think he's pretty well-known. He was definitely part of that first wave that really stuck around.
Yeah. I mean, I know he's been in a lot of hit dramas and stuff, but
level like, of superstar. I feel there's definitely like people who are way better known from that period.
Sure.
And it is funny also when you watch, when they introduce him finally, he finally appears to say hello to the children he's abandoned. To show his global skills, there's some weird like English introduction. There's like, I don't know what that's from. Maybe some random K-Con from like 2013 or something.
Yeah, he's just doing his like thing. He's just like, they just trying to position him as like a very international. And there's no knock. I know Lee Sung-gi is like super famous.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I watched My Girlfriend is a Gumiho.
Yeah, that one.
That's probably his most famous one, right? That was like internationally wise, right?
Yeah, that's definitely, I will admit here to now being on his Wikipedia page to get a sense of his, I quote the title header, Pan-Asian fame. Yes, and that's the first one that comes up.
Yeah, that's like the one. I think that's the one.
Yeah.
That has to be the one.
Yeah, it's definitely, he's not like a marquee Hallyu name in Japan. He's just like, people who got into it through something like Winter Sonata, they probably would encounter him next, but you're sort of average person who's just brushing into it from like a trend show or something, or a variety show.
Right.
They're not going to know who this guy is.
Right. So he's just, I feel like he's there because Lee Hongki honestly can't speak like four sentences in a row without messing up. But Lee Hongi is, I feel like, the actual like paternal heart of the show.
He's our host.
He's our host. He's the real host. He's the girls' yes. host. He's for the trainees. And you know, I think when I say Lee Dong-wook for Produce X, when he becomes host, I think he actually encapsulates that paternal paternal mindset as well as being the host. And I think that's why he's like a good host.
He's your go-to. He's the one you point to as the finest. As
so we have Jang Suk, who's just like creepy uncle. We have Boa, who is like harsh Eunhee. And then we have Lee Seung-gi, deadbeat dad.
Exactly.
And then we have Lee Dong-wook,
father of the year.
Father of the year. Fucking father of the year. So those are your four hosts. Anyways, so Lee Seung-gi's there. He's talking. These kids are getting taught. Kids are getting taught Nekia. Let's talk about Nekia, the song.
Yeah, let's get into it. This is the centerpiece of this episode and this first basically challenge to see how they're eventually reevaluated and sort of shuffled about again. Nekia was also the first real taste of the show proper, since the actual performance came out several months before this episode airs. So this is really the first, like the real first shot of Produce 48. And I think we're in agreement that it's amazing.
Nekia is an amazing song. It's an amazing song. Yeah. It's a really good song, but the Nekia sad piano version is the best Produce 48 song, or best Produce Universe song.
Ooh, wow, that's a good that claim.
Produce Universe song. I love sad piano Nekia. Sad piano Nekia is amazing.
And they do use it so much.
Oh my God, they use it all every episode.
It never wears out its welcome, which is very impressive. It's the perfect blend of like, it's that melancholy, you know. It nails this kind of like, you know, oh, we're graduating high school. What's coming next? Am I happy or sad? Ooh, feeling thing.
Yes, it's the vitamin C graduation song of Korea.
Oh, man.
Sorry for that reference. I really apologize.
What was your high school graduation song?
Closing Time.
Jesus Christ, incredible. I don't remember my high school graduation song. I remember for some reason we had elementary school graduation songs, and it was Green Day's Time of Your Life. And then
that was there around there too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then junior high school, we did it was the Puff Daddy I'll Be Missing You.
Oh, God.
The Notorious B.I.G.'s death.
That seems a little awkward.
Yeah, that one, in retrospect, I'm thrown off how that was the choice. And then I think we did do Green Day again in high school, actually.
Yeah,
so,
you know, that one's
I wish we had a Vitamin C.
Yeah. I mean, Vitamin C was definitely played, but Closing Time was
Closing Time's a good one.
Was the bro song.
Oh, man.
Because they talk about beer.
Hell yeah.
We're in high school. We're like, yeah, beer.
Hell yeah, beer, dudes. We're going to drink.
Hell yeah, bro. Hell, bro. Yeah, bro. Beer, bro.
Dude, it's closing time, but
we're going to start to drink beer. It's going to be tight.
Every ending is some other beginning, something.
What's the song really about? Like, it's not about abortion. That's Brick. It's some other song. It's about
that's Brick.
Yeah. Anyways.
Closing Time is just about life. True anthem.
God,
but
I'm gonna
not
have
as
to go,
good as.
I'm gonna have to go look up all these goddamn 90s songs and put them in the
annotations. Yeah, when when the 16-year-olds who listen to this.
I hope someone hasn't heard the show, just like looks at the annotations lists and just see what kind of a head case like these
these episodes
are without any context.
Try to guess what the story of the show is based on these pictures.
Pod 48 without context. That's our annotations list.
Oh my god. Oh, that's good actually.
Yeah. Yeah. They're gonna get more insane. Anyways, so produce. So yeah, Nekoya, produce 48 version. Nekoya's interesting too because it's in two languages.
Yeah, this is a big thing, and it will play a big part in how the trainees prepare for it. We get an adorable moment of Mnet playing up the cultural differences again early on, because Neko is cat in Japanese, and mm-hmm. all of the AKB trainees have to comment on this.
Yeah,
even though it has nothing to do with it, but it's a cute little moment.
They're all making the Neko like pause.
Yeah, they're all doing nice little poses with one another.
Good egg yolk opportunities.
Right, it's beginning. Yeah. You know.
And then Nekoya in Korean means, pick me, or I pick you, or I choose you, or something.
That's the actual meaning, and that's why it's important. Riffing on something that appears in every produce song.
So it's not actually functional in two languages.
No, not at all.
Not at all. what was kind of annoying about the song's release, though, mm-hmm. was, in the show they do it, and they do the first verse in Korean, the second verse in Japanese. That's how they do mm-hmm. it in the show. But when they released the song, they just released a Korean and a Japanese version.
Right, right.
And so basically what me and like the other K-pop DJs who I play with in Japan, we had to like edit together. We had to Frankenstein together like the actual song.
That was your training for this podcast.
That's when I knew Mnet did not. I was like, M Snake, you bastards.
Right, that was your moment.
They did not give a crap about the people.
Give us the unified version. Don't hide it. That is, it really does kind of illustrate, how it's really them just doing that for the show, and they don't really care too much about what happens outside of it. Like, it's just a great narrative tool here to sort of show us how hard people have to work to learn lyrics in a language that's not natural to them.
So yeah, they have to teach they have to teach every trainee the song, mm-hmm. and the trainees have to learn the songs in both languages, and then learn the dance, and then they are reevaluated once they are filmed performing the song in both languages, and then all the judges get together and watch all the performances. And you can also go watch all the performances; they're all online.
Yeah,
and that's a good thing to note. Most of the stuff that they do, like the evaluations and stuff, they don't even show on Mnet on the actual show in the editing. They put online. And what a lot of people do when they are projecting results or thinking about results is they go look at like who's viewed what content. Or like, what's the most popular content for these trainees? And like, well, she doesn't have a lot of screen time of the show, but her fan cams are getting so many views. So I think she's actually really popular. That kind of thing. So people like, I talked about before how like everybody's constructing their own conspiracy theories and like theories about like, there's a lot of like pollstering. If it's like literally like 538.com pollstering of like who they think is actually really doing well in the Mnet polls. Versus who Mnet says is doing well, and if they align, that's cool. And if they don't align, maybe there's some suspicion.
This is the I saw more campaign posters driving through my neighborhood, so yes. I think there'll actually be a bigger turnout. School of thought.
Yes, and you're gonna. And in Korea, this is it's time for bus stop and subway signs and all these other things, right? Because they're really pushing it. They're really, really pushing it. Like they're ready for this now. This is season three. We're ready for this now. This is not a game.
Right. People know how to approach produce now. Mm-hmm. And that involves, they know how to, as Alan's saying, how to literally buy advertisements to support the people they like and bring in all these other sort of outside the show itself. Because if you're just watching the show, this is where it's funny. You're not getting the full picture. It really is something you have to take a deeper dive into, especially as Produce 48 is moving along, because that's where way more clues start appearing.
Right. And that's, I mean, that's what we're trying to do with this like oral history, is like talk about everything that wasn't on the actual television screen.
Exactly.
As the show is going on. So like we talked about before, Produce 101, you could actually vote if you were outside of Korea. And that kind of sent all sorts of things into a tizzy, and sent the lovable Soye up into the main group, which was just like a fortunate circumstance because she had charisma at least, but you know, she had like no actual dance or singing talent. But that's okay, because you have all these other girls. Anyways, but in Produce 48, after that season, they restricted it to only Koreans. And so one of the ways you could do voting if you were outside of Korea is you could pay a Korean to vote for you. Or you could just campaign really hard in Korea, right? And so you have like basically what you have, like PACs, basically political action committees, right? Of producing the PAC, producer action committees, maybe.
Oh my god!
Or the PACs from China and Japan and Manila and wherever in America funding signs. Funding signs, funding posters, funding banners. And these aren't just small signs. These are like big billboards in like Hongdae or something, right? Something where a lot of kids are going to see every day. Big like things in the Gangnam, like subway station, you'll just see a giant sign,
you're
right?
You'll walk. I didn't see any of the produce ones. I was not fortunate enough to be in Seoul when Produce 48 was airing, but you do see them just for even regular days, to even celebrate people's birthdays and stuff, just general awareness raising. Mm-hmm. These sort of giant ads that fans, whether they're in Korea or outside, will buy as a way to sort of not only show their love for their favorites, but also like get the word out, if you will.
I think there's even a later episode in the show where they just go to the subway and like hang out with their signs and take pictures.
Hell yeah.
In Produce 48. But yeah, like you'll go, I remember going to SM Town Coex during that period. And basically there was a whole hallway that was just all the Yuehua trainees, Wang Yiren, Kim Si-hyun, Choi Yena, and just like huge. And it was paid by definitely a Chinese crew of like fans, like a lot of Chinese fans are like spending tons of money to like push their faves, which is like, so you're getting a lot of campaign on that front. So this is all ramping up in there, in that end. And because it's like, we're on episode two now, at the end of episode two, you're seeing vote results. They're showing the results at this point. And it's really interesting. Some of these vote results, I'm going to bring them up just because.
Yeah. Let's compare what's happened from one to two.
Like, it's pretty early, but you can already see like a lot of them just like being able to stick around forever. Yeah. Wow. Like, but Wang Yiren, who's now in Everglow, she was really high for like the entire season until the end.
Yeah,
she was top 10 for a good bulk of the season.
Oh, this is also peak days for Noah Yamada, kind of the funny, charismatic person who left a deep impression during the auditions by being funny, doing a silly little dance to "Live in La Vida Loca."
Yeah,
she's got a deep voice. Mnet gave her an entire backstory with Photoshop.
They put in a lot of editing for her, which was lovely, but
at the end of this episode, she's top 10 in the vote ranking,
which is insane, right? Because she can't sing.
Oh, absolutely. Like, but it's all just because of her personality, I guess. And I'm surprised just how strong like Japanese trainees do in this end of episode two ranking. Sakura is one of the people, you know, you can just bank on being there for the whole time. It's really a matter of what number will she finish, not like, is she going to make it?
I think most people thought she was going to do top two.
Yeah. So here she's fifth. So I guess that's kind of a shock. But even then, it's not that dramatic yet.
What I was sensing from episode to episode when they would show these rankings is that you'd get a lot of, I felt like there was a lot of basically like, what's the word? Partisanship. Versus of the Korean camp and the Japanese camp. And what you'd see is a lot of reaction and like reaction one way and then reaction the other way, right? So you'd see something like the Japanese trainings as a group just dropping down, and then you'd see them just shooting way back up, and then dropping way back down, and shooting way back up, right? Like, let's take Miyu Takeuchi's like results, and we're going to go through 39, 11, 8, 11, 30, 4, 6, 17. Like,
truly frantic.
Like, absolutely, like, bat crap crazy, right? So it's just like, but this is like the reaction, right? And that's why Mnet's getting freaked out towards the end of the season, just like, we have no control over like what we're doing, right? Doesn't matter anymore. Like, it doesn't matter who we show, people are just gonna like,
and really, yeah. And yeah, this is actually, even at the end of episode two, this is maybe a little bit of foreshadowing, because by this point, Miyu Takeuchi has gotten like 5 seconds of screen time.
I mean, she had the good audition, and they talk about her like being a good singer, but she also sings, and then
they
she
don't
has
dwell
that
on it.
Right. She has a part where she sings the song, but she still sings in the very Japanese way that like Lee Hyun-ki is like trying to like help them not do. God bless him. God bless him for trying to like, hey, don't sing with your nose. Try that.
Right. The whole lovely demonstration.
Yes. And like, yeah, so we'll see. So we'll see about that. But right. Miu gets more and more and more like screen time. But I don't even think it's like, it's always interesting to see if the dog is wagging the tail or the tail is wagging the dog in the show, right?
Right.
It's like, are you giving her screen time because you want to give her screen time, or because if you don't give the number four, number six voted most like ranking person screen time, people are going to burn your house down.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Who are you reacting? Are you?
And so when they go into episode 12 or something, and it's the finale, and Miu's like talking about how she can't sing the high notes or whatever, and that stuff is really annoying because you can't sing the high notes because you can't sing the high notes. I'm just like, why are we doing this? And I'm like, oh yeah, because she ranks six. So you can see this push pull of like how the show is getting built, and then you'll see, you know, the inmates are running the asylum at one point, and then you get a weird show that kind of doesn't make any sense from a narrative perspective anymore, but is exciting to watch because it's just like a box of fire ants that you're shaking.
You don't know when they're going
to
break
out. You don't
know,
then they might come out and bite your hands, and your hands are glued to the box, right? And you have to, all you can do is shake the box.
It's another Carney trick.
Yeah. Anyways,
I wanted to take a sec to talk about the other thing they sort of intersplice here, you know, between the trainees trying to learn the Nekoya dance and vocals, you know, and just improve themselves. We also get some shots of dorm life.
Oh yeah,
you know, we begin to see life in the dorms for these girls.
It feels like immediately after the evaluations, they just like make them walk to the dorms, which could be miles away.
Could be.
It feels like it could be miles away.
And that does not give us any sense of location.
They do not come out of a van.
No.
In this transition. And they're all wearing their audition clothing. Some of them, which is not very mobile.
No.
Right?
Yeah,
and it seems like, to be okay, very cold. Go. They're all wearing very puffy jackets.
Yeah, it's cold times in Korea at this point. So they get there. It's a nice looking dorm from the outside. Vaguely castle-ish, I think.
Right.
They go on in, they go into their rooms, and we just see a little slice of life moments.
It's like a state school dorm.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, you know, like 4 to 5 to a room.
4 to a room, yeah.
cameras in every corner.
You know, the classic school experience.
And then, you know,
no
you
skinship, of course.
Oh, yeah, they have a list of rules. So one is no skinship. Yeah.
Which for anyone not versed in this terminology means no, like, oh, don't touch too much.
Which immediately goes out the window.
Oh, yeah. It's a nice touch. It's good. The kids still have a rebellious streak to them.
Yeah.
Instantly just start brushing against one another.
Yeah. I think, honestly, like, Choi Yena and Joe Yuri's skinship is, like, one of the big reasons they did 3 and 4.
So there you go.
So no skinship, but, you know, maybe some skinship.
Wink, nudge.
Wink, nudge.
A lot of nice little shots of people taking stuffed animals out of suitcases and putting them on their beds.
Yeah, most people, it's kind of like Survivor where you get one like luxury item, I guess.
and like 8 people bring Minion stuffed toys.
And you're just like, why? Okay.
The continued 2018 celebration of Minions.
God, loving Minions. Oh, speaking of Minions, you know what we did not talk about?
Speaking of banana.
Banana. So we talked about... our girl, two of our girls, Japanese HKT trainees,
mm-hmm.
Nakoyabuki and Tanaka Miku. And both are very popular in AKB system at this point. I think Nako did 9, number 9 in Senbatsu.
Yeah, that sounds about right. She did well. It was very high.
And they're like hot properties right now. They're just like doing very well. They're very young yes. And they're just like ranking very high, so they're kind of like being positioned as like some bankable talent for AKB. Yeah, okay, they were 10 and 9. They were a little 10 and 9.
There you go. That's that top 10.
Yeah,
powerhouse wrecking ball and combo.
And they're like part, they have like a whole unit group, and they're like friends forever, and they're like cute together, and they do cute things together. And they didn't get their audition showed.
Yeah, maybe you're wondering, oh, if these people are so big, how come I haven't really seen them in the show yet? Why are they sort of just on the periphery?
So, well, they picked a very specific song to
for their audition, yeah.
And it's a song that they've performed many times before in Japan.
AKB staple, AKB family staple. A little number called Tonori no Banana.
Which means the banana next door.
Banana next door. You know, I was watching a bunch of the live performances of it, like just throughout the years, at, like AKB shows before we started recording. You know, if you're just watching those and you're not seeing any lyrics translation or anything, it seems, you know, wholesome-ish.
Right.
You know, it always opens with the two people singing the song. They're like reading a newspaper, which as someone who writes heavily for a newspaper, I appreciate their loyalty to physical media.
Shout out to newspapers.
Shout out dead media. So yeah, they like it's them reading a newspaper, then they like lower it, so it's kind of like, oh, time for a musical number, and then it's a nice sort of, you know, slowly unfolding song, sounds pleasant enough until you get into the lyrics, and yeah. You might be getting a hint if you're wondering why banana is so prominent. Well, take a guess, let your mind wander to its worst places.
So
and
I'm gonna
you'd
let me just right. read. I'll just read some of the lyrics translated. The English.
Alan,
translator.
Please give your most cute performance.
Even though I look like this, I'm a really awesome woman. I'm the type who looks thin and clothes, but surprisingly, I'm glamorous. I wear adult makeup, and I'm a bit experienced in love. Yeah, you're not ready yet. You're still like a child putting on a show, baby. Go back home. The banana next door is too unripe. A friend without secrets is boring. If you do this and you do that, you'll be mature. In order to become a tasty banana. So there's like this...
First off, this is classic Akimoto Yasushi writing that's full of all these like innuendos, but innuendos that aren't necessarily what you think the innuendo would be.
Sure, 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 sure. There's
not, the banana actually isn't what you think the banana is.
Right.
a cigar is not a cigar.
Right, the cigar represents the maturation of a tobacco leaf.
Exactly, yes. Powerful but, stuff. But also, still but horned also, up.
But also, yeah, so basically I think their performance got a little gong show. You remember that clip from the original Gong Show? I don't know if you've seen
which
that,
one
where it's it. The Popsicle Twins.
Popsicle Twins? I missed this. Oh okay. Man, this is the annotations I live for.
Yeah. You know, like the gong, like the American Gong Show in the 70s with the
anyone who doesn't know what the Gong Show is, great TV, the birthplace of all things.
Basically the Gong Show is the up,
you gong.
The Gong Show is the ancient grandfather of Produce 48.
I'm looking at Popsicle Twins now, and yeah, it did not take long for me to figure out what is going on with this yeah. performance.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just two girls. They pull back the curtain. It's just two teens in tight shirts eating popsicles.
Yeah.
And Tenori no Banana performance has a very Popsicle Girls, Popsicle Twins kind of je ne sais quoi about it.
Yeah, it's got that sort of PG-13 bordering on higher vibe to it.
It's got that literal G rating, contextual, depending on how you feel that day. Anywhere from NC-17 to PG-13.
This is this is looking at the VHS cover of The Little Mermaid and looking too closely at the castle in the background. Yes. Exactly. And being like, uh-oh, I see now.
So, yeah, Tenori no Banana. Yeah, definitely cut immediately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what are our theories why it was cut? Because I was jumping around looking at how people reacted to this. And there's different schools of thought.
I mean, I haven't looked at much of the theories, but I think it's obvious like why it was cut, because it's just like Korea is even more, as far as sex goes, even more conservative than Japan even is.
Yes.
And so like they're just like hell no.
So I think the potential the factors that sort of, this is all jumping around from posts at the time, and even after the show finished, people reflecting on it. A few factors that maybe made it even more likely to be cut, left on the cutting room floor. As Alan mentioned, like these two performers look really young too. So it's extra kind of like unsettling, especially you don't want that to be sort of your first introduction on the show. Like, you turn on episode one and this is what you're seeing. It's not going to be too like inviting to your casual viewer. That's one theory that goes along just the sort of general prudishness.
And there are thoughts that, you know, like if you are trying to push Nako and Miku, honestly, as a top tier candidate, because they are popular in AKB, to start them off on a Tenori no Banana, like, step is like a really tough place to start them from.
Yeah, that's true too. The other important thing to keep in mind is, you know, Yabuki is going to become she's going to make the final group, which is important to note. And this episode, we'll get into, this is the episode where her story really begins, since we didn't see her audition.
Right.
They
both get Fs.
Exactly.
They both get Fs.
And with Miku Tanaka, she actually doesn't make it this far, I think, because I believe she suffers a foot injury
That's what they say. She's in the, she's actually in the next stage after Nekoya. Like in practicing, but she doesn't make it to the final performance.
So I guess at that point she had already sort of backed out. So I think Mnet is trying not to put too much attention to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the other conspiracy, is they cut it because it's like, we don't want to spend much time with this Miku person. She's not going to go anywhere. She doesn't last the first elimination.
Another thing about the auditions too, and I was looking at a lot of this stuff like between last recording, this recording, but they were talking about how like some of the actual planned, some of the AKB, especially a lot of the AKB stuff, right? Some of the AKB performances were screwed up because they actually at the last minute wanted to siphon off certain members, specifically Sakura and Jirina. So mm-hmm. like, you know, like, okay, if you watch the audition or the audition episodes, HKT48 as a group gets their performance and they get shit on. And then Sakura herself gets a performance and she gets like lauded, right?
She gets praised.
But if you watch the performances, they're not actually particularly impressive.
Yeah.
But that's because they were supposed to do a whole thing. So what I hear is that they were supposed to do a whole thing together mm-hmm. as HKT without Sakura doing a solo. And then they're just like, no. We want Sakura doing a solo. We want these girls doing girls because these girls suck and Sakura's good. And this is what we're going to do for show. And so they siphon her off and they're doing a thing.
Yeah.
And specifically, like, Jirina, you know, she does her Dear J thing, which she does all the time, like, in her live shows. So it's, like, comfortable for her to do. And it's, like, good, but it's not, like, amazing, right? It seems kind of underwhelming for her to go to Korea and her first thing to do is just Dear J, right?
Right.
And then the girl, there's only two SKE members who go, Jirina and another girl, whose name I forget, who gets limited very quickly, so whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But she has to go do a performance with another girl who's also siphoned off. And they do a cover, the Japanese version of Twice, Knock Knock. And it's like, if you watch it online, they don't show it on the show. Well, they maybe like a second, but if you watch online, mm-hmm. it's like really amateur and really like terrible and underpracticed and stuff. And yeah, so it's just like that kind of, I just like talking about like this thing where they're already kind of recrafting or redirecting energy from planned situations to make a different narrative for what a lot of people intended, and that can affect the quality or the performances of a lot of the people that you see on the show.
Yeah.
And so we talked about before how we're like, this is an A performance or this is a D performance, really? Like, this doesn't make any sense. But it's like, it's kind of like not meant to make any sense anymore, right? Because they're already like going through and like breaking up things that were practiced. AKB might have practiced something like really, really well done. And then just at mm-hmm. the last second they had to change it because the producers right. made them change it, right? So don't even think like, oh, when we talk about like the teachers like crapping all over them, that like we agreed like that they're terrible or something. I mean, when we talk about like something is terrible in the show or like a quality of performance is terrible in the show, we're just taking it like on the face value. But
we're letting what Mnet gives to us is what we're taking right. here.
Like when you watch wrestling and someone does suplex someone, you're like, oh, that must have hurt, right? Right. You know, it probably didn't hurt, or maybe it did hurt.
But we don't know.
You don't know how much it hurt. You don't know how well executed that suplex was. But you know what they're trying to relate to you. And you know under it that there's a realism that it's not supposed to hurt. So we know AKB is supposed to suck. Right. We know they probably don't suck as much as they do suck on the show.
Right. They are presented as sucking so much. But they really...
Some of them also might them just suck. Right? Right. That's a key point I want to talk about in the appreciation of idol reality TV as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most people would be who are into this would be better off approaching it with that mindset.
Yeah, I do think. And of course, yeah, we're Mnet is giving us what we can see. We can infer all sorts of other things here, but yeah, there's, you know, we're looking at the text, we're drawing from the text. The text said no tonari no banana.
Yes.
And you'll never know what that looks like.
Yes.
Unless you leak that footage, email us.
Yeah. Speaking of leak stuff, okay, I think, is that all the audition stuff we want to talk about? The return to episode?
Yeah.
I think
point,
so.
Yeah, they do their reevaluations.
Yeah,
they film themselves. And then
I do want to talk about just a quick aside. You know, there are some people who've come out and talked about their experiences on Portal 48. Go Yujin, who is retired from the idol life supposedly, she's gone on a couple shows and talked about it. And they do talk about how terrible the dorms are and stuff like that. And that's always interesting. So you can go watch those And
what did you think about the dorms? What were so bad about them?
It was just like very flimsy and very cold, like underheated and stuff. And it was like pretty strict. And yeah, just like an overall terrible experience. I also love this stuff because when China started to do their shows, mm-hmm. they actually put in extra stuff about how good their dorms were.
Oh, wow.
And they are very good. Like even the idols who go on those shows, like these are really nice. This is like a really nice place to live, especially like the Chuang thing, especially during like COVID time. You know, they all went to the Hainan Islands, which is like the artificial islands down like kind of South China. Mm-hmm. And like people were like, oh, this is so nice here. Like half of the motivation to stay on the show was just like, wow, this is really nice to be here. Versus like some weird inland Chinese spot that's racked with COVID, right?
Right, right.
Right. And so like, oh, the food's so good here and stuff like that.
Like that up.
Yeah. And then like when the Rocket Girls, the first Produce 101 girl group got made, they had like a goddamn like mansion. I'll send the article if I can get. And it was just like they talked about how expensive the mansion one was, and it was like ridiculous. It almost seems like a direct like
rebuff,
clap back at like Mnet Produce
for like how crap.
Yeah,
one thing that did strike me about like honestly all of this portion is, you know, whether it's kind of commenting on how in Japan they don't do it this way with their pop music, or just talking about the challenges of being an idol in Korea, like you'll see a lot of the girls in these dorm segments talk about how like, oh yeah, this is what every K-pop trainee has to do every day mm-hmm. for like 7 years until they debut. And like, as it's going along, it's just like, I don't know if this is really a glowing presentation for K-pop. Like, especially hearing the China thing, it's like, oh, that's kind of how you sell it as like, oh, we're an industry that cares, at least in theory. Whereas here it's like an accidental, you know, they're trying to sell the story of like hard work, determination, blah, blah, blah. But like, it just doesn't, especially when you hear the stories of how it actually is just shit and it's mm-hmm. like cold and all you eat is cup noodle. That's what they talk about. It's like, we have cup noodle here.
Right.
And that's like a big, like gourmet item.
Right.
Fine. Delicious food. Don't get me wrong. But still, like, it's not lobster and steak every night.
Right. Yeah, the worst stories I heard about dorm stuff in Mnet was like definitely from idol school, which I guess like people's hair was falling out and like people were like having their periods at wrong times because it was just like everybody was packed into the same room and it was like awful.
God, idol school, at least
like Mnet, it was ruining their biological functions. That's how bad idol school was.
Mnet doesn't just ruin dreams, they ruin actual physical well-being.
So yeah, do you know Joe Yuri being an idol school veteran, that's like, you know, that's like the Vietnam War. So I was just like, yeah, you got to give these veterans their respect.
This is what we'll do, a moment of silence. Yes. Happy Memorial Day, everybody.
Yeah, happy Memorial Day. Anyways, so okay. Yeah. We get in their dorms.
With sort of a dramatic, like, what's everyone's new grade? We're seeing all of the evaluators watching this footage, and we don't see any results at the end of episode two. That's the entirety of the first half of episode three is a reshuffling.
Right. Well, okay. Yeah. We can go into a little bit of detail of them, like, getting taught and, like, some of the focuses they're talking about.
Yeah, go for it.
So, you know, okay, we get our first Honda Hitomi, really, like, focus here. Mm-mm. Honda Hitomi, who does make the end of the group, she is an AKB staple, or not staple really, she's actually pretty like is she getting popularity at this point? Before, maybe a little bit,
but she's not, you know, we're just talking about people who are doing much better at this point. I mean, yeah, like Hitomi, she's not ranked in any election prior to this one.
She's in team eight. And Team 8 is like, Team 8's like, from my understanding, is the regional team. Like, they have a team that's just full of like a representative from every region in Japan.
Right.
And it's like kind of more of like a cultural thing than like an actual performance thing, right? It's like
vague tourism thing. So
it's, you know, it's kind of like the Miss America version of produce, where it's just like, I'm from Iowa or I'm from South Carolina or something like that. And like Honda's homies
from Kochiki, which might as well be one of those places. So.
Right, exactly. But you know, Honda's homie Hee-chan is like very, she's cute. I mean, she's like a fun, like she has a good personality and stuff. She's not like a gravure idol, or like she doesn't have like what I guess would say like a marketable image at this, like before Eyes One. But she dances really well. She's a cheerleader. She's like a high school cheerleader. She dances very well. She dances like better than 99% of the AKB like crowd they send to the show.
Yeah.
And she parlays that into basically incredible success on the show. And this is where you get the first taste of that with her.
Yeah.
Like she's in class C. They don't really show her audition that much. She's in class C and she gets called out for being really good, for like picking it up really quickly. And this is the kind of thing where it's like also tail wagging the dog wagging the tail. They don't give Honda any sort of like credence before this point. But when Bae Young Jin like calls her out and just like, hey, come dance. And with another trainee, Korean trainee, Song Yin Che, who's also like one of the older idols on older trainees. And it's like kind of like one of the, this is my last chance trainees.
Right.
And they dance together and they're like both very good. And she's like, these girls are very good. So we get a Hee-chan showing and we get reasons for it because she's an excellent dancer. And, you know, so again, spoiler alert, she'll parlay that to actually get into the final group. So good for her. She is like actually like super dark horse. Like that was one of the probably untouched narratives of the show to continue and go to the end. Right. And so you have these like,
I mean, it's totally a total like those are all, nobody would have had those odds at the start.
No one was like, oh yeah, Honda Hitomi is a lock. Right.
There wasn't even any upside.
I don't think anybody in Tochigi, like,
watch out for this one.
I don't think anybody in Tochigi thought that. Like who?
The strawberry farmers of Tochigi. Yeah, you know, they had other things to worry about.
But that's what you see in the show, is you see like these honest effort, like especially, I think for the show position specifically, you see Japanese honest effort trainees with talent getting pushed.
Yeah.
By both the show and both and the fans. The fans are like, yeah, we can go with this. We can go with this. Like, she's not core AKB. She doesn't have that like kind of mushy center that we hate. So we're gonna push her. She has talent. Yeah, she has promise. Like, we're not embarrassed to see her on stage.
Right. And this is actually a pretty big theme in this portion of the show during the like training sections, as we learn how like this maybe is just Mnet's presentation, but it does feel like the Japanese trainees are like going the extra proverbial mile to learn the Korean lyrics, whereas the Korean side is kind of, at least what we're shown, kind of throwing their hands up and being like, ah, I'll get to that later.
Right. We do.
Let's figure out. And this becomes an important early, like, I think, storyline and something that I think did touch a lot of people who are just following it at this point. Like it's a comment you see in a lot of the like episode reactions at this moment. It's kind of like, oh, interesting, the Japanese side is trying.
That's like the main takeaway from when they watch the audition, the reevaluations, is that like,
yes,
for the most part the Korean trainees are disappointing. A lot of the high level Korean trainees just do not do well. Just especially when they have to learn the Japanese side. And then a lot of the Japanese trainees, actually a lot of the Japanese trainees also do not do well, but they show a lot of effort and they're not doing well.
Right. They have at least heart going for them, sort of like trying their best.
And there's the whole idea. There's the whole idea of like following through that the trainer, the mentors really appreciate with a lot of the Japanese trainings. And even if they screw up or miss a lyric or miss a dance step, they just keep going.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can watch, again, you can watch the evaluations without any context, just like on the website or on YouTube or whatever. And I think for the most part, what they're going with on the show is the truth. That, like, you see a lot of Korean trainees kind of screw something up and then just kind of clam up and go silent and freak out. And you see a lot of the Japanese ones just like screw up and just keep going even harder.
They just push through it. Yeah.
And I think the most iconic version of that is the, what's her name? Iwatate Saho. Aho Iwatate. Mm-hmm. Who I only knew before because of her propensity to eat bugs on AK Bingo.
Right.
She really loves crickets and bugs. And, but she just like, her dance is just psychotic.
Yeah, yeah. She just
her neck goes dance for it. Is like notably psychotic, and like,
yeah,
she's got Bae Young Jin going omo 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 omo, and yeah, it's good, and they're just like, you know, I can't, and then she like gets to the one part where she can't do it. She's like totally confident with the one part. She's got like. There's like a brain functionality of the AKB trainees that is like really interesting at this point, where they're just like compartmentalizing every like 2 seconds of their performance.
Yeah. And I forget. I mean, I forget who says it, but they do point out that it does help a lot that they've at least had that stage experience.
Exactly.
Yeah. The actual trainees have just been like, yeah, they've just been like looking at a textbook for 7 years, and they suddenly have to do it, and when something they have to improvise, basically like a glitch happens and it's a big problem.
And I mean that's like the idea of 48, right? AKB 48. Exactly. is like you get 50 of them on the stage and it doesn't matter if two or three of them screw up at any point. It's like, yeah. No one expects 48 idols to be synchronized.
No.
Right?
Exactly.
Which is a problem when you have, and we'll see in the next episodes, when you have five and you do expect them to be synchronized, because it's really obvious when it's not.
Yeah.
But in the Nekuya stage, where it's 96, not so much of a problem.
Not so much of a problem.
And so the Japanese ones know it, and they just kind of barrel through it. They're like, we're going to get the Korean part right. We're going to sing the Korean right. And we'll see if the dance steps make sense. I'll do the finger licking thing or whatever. But maybe I don't kick right at the right time. They'll cut to another person. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm okay.
So, yeah, like we said, we see Nako get her first props now versus before. Nako in Class F, but obviously not deserving to be in Class F.
Right. And very quickly establishes herself as, she's going to shoot up. We don't know how high yet, but it's looking good.
And I know she's popular, but I didn't know she was, like, actually talented until Produce 48. Like, nothing I had seen in her AKB stuff has, like, shown, like, aptitude for dance or singing. Or, I mean, she sings fine, but nothing really showed me that she was going to be a good dancer. But she's a good dancer.
Yeah, she delivers, and even if it's in the Class F setting, she still really comes through.
You see the performance, she's sharp, and she gets it, and I get what they talk about. When they show her evaluation, they say she does all the dance moves, and it seems pretty easy for her. It doesn't look hard when she does it. Yes. And I sense that. And, you know, that's a part of that's her short stature and her limbs not being very long, so they don't have to go very far. I'm being totally serious. Like she don't have to do a lot of effort to like do these rotations and stuff. So it seems pretty easy. So like, you know, like it makes sense to me. I wanna slip in here that, you know, another thing like Go Yujin and some people who've revealed about the show is that they said some of the idols, especially the preferred ones, get a copy of the dance and the song earlier than the rest.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, and so I wouldn't be surprised if like Nako got a copy of the song earlier to practice.
Right.
Because she's like, you know, they talk about a lot of the trainees have schedule, like schedule conflicts and stuff. Lee Chae Young also was sick for a lot of the training, quote unquote sick. You know, it's kind of like the NBA sick. You know? It's like the NBA sick, like did not play because coach's decision or stomach flu. That just means hangover, or or herpes or something, right? But Lee Chae-yong not present for the training, but did very well. Did very well. Probably got that scepter. I think, like, you know, Lee Gaun, I think probably got it to her because everybody does like a really nice job. Like, there's an idea that some people are better at picking up stuff than other people, but some people are very clean and some people are not clean.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about like people going from A to F or F to A or doing really well or really poorly, these huge drops, we have to look at those as being probably engineered narrative pushing.
Right, because that's such a dramatic thing. It's not, you know, like C to B or even A to C. That is kind of, that's believable but not exciting, you know.
Right, right. That doesn't really matter, right?
No.
And nothing really matters other than going into A or getting out of A.
Exactly. That's a good point. So we basically
the letter grade determines where you stand on stage. And if you're an
A,
you're
in the... Yeah, that's an important detail. A, you're like right
you're
up
in
front.
The and you're eligible to be center, which center means you get like the final shot, the beginning shot, and a lot of other... Everybody's made center has made the final group.
This is a heavy thing emphasized this season, or this episode, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're like, you really want center and stuff like that. Yeah. So,
and then B is like right behind them. C is a little further back.
Yeah. B, C, and D are just like points on the star, and F doesn't even stand on the stage.
F are considered backups, basically. Mm-hmm. They relent and are allowed to dance like on the side of the elevated stage. Right. So they're kind of literally beneath everyone else,
right?
But you know, you can still see them doing their thing, kind of.
Kind of. Doesn't matter if you want to see them, you can just go online and watch their cam because everybody's online.
That's true too. So
so we're talking about the scripted
drops.
Narrative of people moving around, so we can talk about back to Joe Yuri.
Right, go for it. Because this, you, I believe, think this is the moment you realized.
This is the moment I realized my girl was on the highway to success. Because Joe Yuri initially gets placed in Class A, which honestly is a little bit of a surprise. She could sing, she sang really well, and she performed fine. But she didn't really blow anybody away, I thought, with the audition. But they put her in A, and I was like, okay, well, that's cool. That's cool. You know, whatever. She's got an interesting voice. I get it. And then she just dumps a turd of of a reevaluation. But it's honestly not that much more of a turd than some of the others.
Right, right.
Right?
I think that's a good point.
So, like, Eunbi, also in Class A, also just does not, like, does the same thing, just doesn't dance at a point and doesn't sing at a point because she forgets everything.
Yeah.
But she gets sent down to, like, D. Or, no, she maybe C. I think she gets sent to C.
Yeah, it's C.
But they send Joe Yuri all the way to F, and this is, like, the first time anybody's gone from A to F. And if you get, there's only one reevaluation, so you're in F. If you get reevaluated into F, you're just permanently F. So they send her to F, and there's this big thing. She's crying. Of course, it's sad and all this stuff. But I knew because they cliffhang this idea of her getting sent to F, and then they follow through on it, that she was going to have this narrative, this redemption narrative for the entire show.
Mm-mm.
And I was like, oh, my girl's Mnet's going to do her so good.
You took back all the negative things you said about Mnet at that moment.
No, I knew the M Snake.
Bravo,
no,
Mnet.
Because M Snake is working in my favor does not mean it's less of a snake.
That's fair. Again, right. Alan is a man of the people, and he respects this.
Yes,
the populist among us.
So I knew I had some like there was going to be some pushing. At least she was. Mm-hmm. I knew she was going to get screen time. That's what I was sure of. She was going to get screen time. And then and screen time she got. So that was my indication. So if you're watching a show like this or something and you see some girl, one of your girls get dumped into the dumpster, don't feel bad. Mm. Feel good about that. Is it better to be dumped into the dumpster than to be just not shown at all?
I mean, this is a good point. And it actually was something I want to ask you, just kind of in your, from a strategy standpoint, in this early goings of a talent competition show, maybe one using the produce model, like, where do you want to start? So is it better to go from F to A or A to F?
I think
better
either, to be a C and I think raise either up? Is fine, honestly.
Okay, you just believe the big drop is the important thing, something historic.
I think being in C or D is like a death sentence.
Really? Okay.
Unless you go from either of those to A.
Okay.
I think C to A is better than D to A. I think D is actually like the
D
dead.
Seems to not have much going for them, right?
D is like, a big dead group.
Who's even in?
Yeah, I guess
F
Kim
does get more attention.
Kim Minju's in D. That's okay, like the only D so that makes it. And I guess Honda is the only C that really makes it. But a lot of the C's end up being, at least in the 20s and 30s, a lot of the D's, most of the D's drop out after the first elimination.
Yeah.
D is a dead group. Yeah.
So, D for dead. So, heard it here first, folks.
You know, I mean, they redid the letter, so it doesn't even matter anymore. They went like ABCX or something. But like two F's made it, and a lot of the F's went to like top 20. Right.
Yeah, I mean, F is not a bad way, and even you can see F's kind of get into the middle when they really shouldn't.
F gets you a lot of screen time.
That's true.
F gets you a lot of screen time, maybe even more screen time than A.
Yeah, A is only. I feel A. There's like a hierarchy already within A, because it's like, you know, Sakura is going to get tons of attention, but if you're like, you're not at her level, you're either going to do worse or you're just not going to stand out, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
Just be an F. This is the lesson you can apply to most of your life.
Yeah, just go on. If you're going on one of these shows, just, you know, pick the lewdest, most offensive song you can audition with and just do that and get shoved into F and then make your way back up. Climb that ladder.
Perfect narrative. Think about the narratives, folks. Don't think about your talent.
Think about the narrative. It's all about if you can generate a narrative, you know. So speaking of narrative, so like this is like the thing. And they talk about, and there was, I think, a news article earlier this year where Somi talked about how there was a fight on Produce 101 on Infinite's like little tussle. But she's like, yeah, the producers asked me to throw a fight. To start a fight on the show. And the idea was like, we want to give you more screen time, but we have no reason to. So can you do something that would give us a reason to? I mean, it makes sense to me. Like Mnet was like, we need to feature you more. You are not going to get number one or number two if you just don't have the screen time. And you're nice and people like you, but you don't do anything, right? Right. So you need to do something. There's something you need to do. Well, she's like, I can like have a little tussle during practice, I guess. I'm like, yeah, that'd be great. Just do that. And so I think, like, you know, Joe Yuri being Stone Music and being part of the CJ, like corporate family, I feel like they went to her probably.
Yeah.
And were just like, we're gonna dump you into F. So just go do the audition and have it suck or whatever. Right?
Screw up. Don't,
yeah, just,
you
screw
know,
up.
Pause,
just screw up.
Pause if you have to.
Right. Right. Because she's also been on stage.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
So it's like, yeah, okay, you got scared and you forgot and you got frustrated and whatever. But she doesn't really screw up like that ever again. It's not like a Jungiri thing where she can't hit the high note without cracking. And that happens over and over and over and over again because that's an actual problem she has.
Right.
It's like this one time thing where she gets stage fright and can't do it right.
Right. Just at the worst spot. It's like literal, she choked is the, I guess, the idea here.
Yeah. But it's a complete rope-a-dope. It's tight.
And it worked perfectly.
It worked. So, you know, Joey is a smart girl. She's a smart girl.
Alan's boosterism coming through again.
Well, you know, I've always been impressed. So, cheers. What
the major movement? I don't think there's any. Yeah, a lot of A's go down. We got a montage of people being shocked, like, oh, the A came to C.
Yeah, just some let's see in my notes what else I got. Just some strong Japanese performances, a lot of them doing the Korean well, which is cool.
The exception here being Chiba Eri, who begins her story at this moment as well.
The kid crew, the AKB kid crew, is just a source of extreme frustration on my part watching them. Mm-mm. And like what Mnet's trying to do with them, and like Chiba Eri. I have nothing against Chiba Eri personally, but she is like the ultimate like reason why I can't really follow AKB.
So this kind of performer,
this kind of idea of a thing that I need to like, this kind of thing, what she appeals to is just not of any interest in me at all. And it's like Kim Sohye from Produce 101 to the extreme.
Yeah.
Right. And like just bafflingly self oblivious.
Yeah.
Because you can go into like what she does in the show. Because you'll be a lot more fair than I would.
No bias here. Yeah. I'm the journalist. But yeah, she starts out, you know, her whole thing, she's not like overflowing with confidence. She's not like, I'm going to be A, but she kind of sets her sights for C.
Right. I mean, because, I think she goes into the whole show knowing she has a shtick. Right. The young girls go into the show knowing they have a shtick that's worked in Japan. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, yeah, we'll just keep doing it. Like, this is our thing. We're just, like, cute and awkward and weird.
So she goes into this, and she goes to F initially. And she gets a lot of attention from Mnet, of course, but also the judges kind of dwell on her.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I quote, every time I see her, I feel sad.
Mm-hmm.
She's very, like, she's a very deflated performer. She's having, at least the way she presents herself to the show, she really struggles to learn any of the Nekoya choreography.
I think she just really struggles to learn anything.
That's that's fair. On the show, at least. We're not going to speak in her personal life.
I'll extend it to her personal life.
Okay, well, that's why Alan's on the Chiba Hater Brigade.
Yeah.
But yeah, on the show, she's just like not good. She's like botching it left and right. And she really doesn't get better over the 3 days they're given to learn this. Even though she cries a lot, which is common with the AKBF people, the F club, like there's a lot of constant emotion of like, what are we doing here?
Sato Minami too.
And she's just so sad sack during this. She gets reevaluated and she's still an F. Like,
yeah. And when she gets reevaluated, she's like, I think I practiced really hard. I think I'm going to get a C.
Right. This is the C, like, I was talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, she's a real Eeyore of the show. Just always glum from that point on. But like also unaware of, yeah, like Alan said, she's not very...
And it just
maybe
doesn't,
for character, but
it just doesn't stop, right? Like every, even after this episode, it's just like every time anything happens to her, she's just like cries, and then everybody has to. It feels like the whole show just shuts down, and it's just like, Eri, don't cry.
Right? She's like, an emotional time bomb. It's tough, but again, whether it's intentional or not from Mnet, you never know. Like, she does end up getting lots of attention because of this, like, despite really not having the talent.
Right.
Like, even, like, yeah, more so than anyone.
Yeah, so, I mean, even after the show, she goes on to do some more shows in Korea. There was that one.
Yeah, she finds her niche, so... Yeah. But, yeah, she's not... she's interesting would be my fair like take on watching her, especially in this episode. There's kind of like, it's interesting just to compare it to sort of the more like, you know, oh no, I went from A to C, whatever will I do? It's interesting seeing someone who like maybe will never rise out of the ditch that they've been tossed into, talent wise.
Yeah.
But
there's no way way you could edit anything she does to make it look more talented.
No. Which is interesting. It's a real like, and it really speaks to something that you can see, especially at this point in the show, with like the idea of the AKB48 hierarchy. Which is like, you know, we know by now Sakura and Jirina are like the great ones. Mm-hmm. Everyone's talked about them, and Mnet's presented them as the saviors of Japanese pop music. But this episode really does remind that, you know, there really is cannon fodder in the AKB world. Mm-hmm. And they're all here in the F class, kind of just being sad and like not making progress. Mm-hmm. It's a good reminder that even though AKB is kind of presented as this, one basic like idea that represents everything within that ecosystem, there's so much happening, and you have your Sakuras, but you also have your Chiba Aries kind of wallowing away in despair.
Right. Yeah. I find every time Chiba Aries is on screen, it's a speed bump in the show. And I'm just like, want to completely cut her from the show, but that's just me. I understand.
Well,
like,
guess what? Like, she's not going away yet.
Yeah, they even go on. I mean, she makes it because, you know, whatever, for whatever reasons. And then like later on in another performance, they try to give her like, oh, she's like can do this. She can. She's talented, but she still sucks. Like, right. She sings her part and it's like not good, and it's obviously been tweaked in the studio, and it sucks. And it's like Mnet, like,
yeah, it's real unfair, like, privilege that she's given all these chances.
Yeah, there's so many other AKBers that you could have like done this with, but she's not good.
Well, she'll be sticking around for a little bit, yeah. So we will revisit the Chiba Eri saga, mm-hmm, in the coming weeks. But at this point, she's still F. She's still down there in the mud.
She goes from F to F.
She goes F to F. Not as dramatic as Joe Yuri's drop, right, which does not work for Chiba Eri.
Yeah, if you complete the thought of if you get on these shows, what your plan should be. If you're going to go to F, you probably should get out of F.
Yeah, that's
good advice. Get out of F.
Trainer Allen's advice. Try to get out of F. Maybe don't stay there. So everybody's been reshuffled at this point. I think we got all the major ones. Are we missing any?
I want to talk
really
about
big.
I want to talk about Jirina a little bit.
Go for it.
Just
yes, yeah.
Because she gets so much. We talk about Sakura a lot because she makes it, and it's like, okay, but Jirina gets a lot of showtime in this episode.
That's true.
Too, as like kind of the quintessential Japan narrator for the whole, mm-hmm, Japan versus Korea narrative that's being generated in this like episode, which is one of the things Mnet is definitely like mainstay trying to do, right?
Yeah,
at this point. And they talk about like how the training process for Nekoya especially benefits the Korean trainees more than the Japanese ones, at least on screen in these rooms. Mm-hmm. Like, because we said, you know, probably some of them get the tape before,
right,
and can practice wherever they want, but you know, they're talking about like how they don't understand or like they can't follow along quickly. Most of them have like an earpiece through the show, mm-hmm, and there's probably like a live translator going on,
right,
like,
right,
so they can hear like what they're supposed to be doing from a live translator,
happening,
right? But you know, like dancing, something like dancing or like watching along and dancing, and like we talked about before, some of these AKBers don't have formal dance training, right? They like,
yeah,
because when you go into AKB, you aren't trained,
right? As many of them have said themselves on the show, it's kind of like, oh, you just do it on your own, basically,
right? Because you can do whatever you want in AKB. You can be a variety star, or you can be a swimsuit, mm-hmm, model, or you can be a YouTuber cooker, or you can have natural musical talent and just like do that, right? But it's,
right, yeah.
Well, like someone like Honda Hitomi has like done like cheerleading and probably has, you know, a dance school she goes to, someone like Cherry Chiba has never been to a dance class, right?
Oh, here we go. Let's leave Chiba area. To the
I mean,
side
but
here.
It's like obvious, like to everybody, right? So, Jirina obviously has dance training, but so with that, she's still a little slow to pick up on the Korean style of dance training of the do as I do 1 2 3 4 and then break it down and spend 30 seconds on it and then do it again the next 30 seconds, right? Which is pretty much what all the trainees are, the mentors are doing.
Yeah.
And so what struck me particularly about this, her segment in these episodes is the part where they're talking about how everybody's getting together and watching the screen, but they don't even understand the announcement to get around the screen. So they're like in the back. Mm-hmm. And like, there's literally the scene where they're like trying to stand on their tippy toes and like watch the little iPad.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And they're just like, it felt so unfair and I felt so angry. They like get like this sense of, I felt angry at the Korean trainees for being racist against us. And it's like kind of an interesting thing because of the whole political dynamic between Japan and Korea and how classically I think we talk about Japan as being the aggressors against Korea versus vice versa. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, now you have the Japanese in Korea feeling prejudiced against or isolated.
Right. It's a little shift. It's a little turnabout.
But it quickly gets resolved by Korean trainees stepping up and, you know, pulling Jirina over to a spot where they can both practice together. And that's really cute, I guess.
Yeah, it's a nice little moment. You know, a little upends your expectations. It's not that, you know, friendship conquers all. Something about music is the language we all know.
Yeah, it feels very scripted, but, you know, it's cute. And I get it why they want to put that in the part. And this is like the kind of like the interesting texture of Produce 48, where they're trying to prove that, you know, Japanese and Korean people can get along.
Yeah, it is something they're trying to push at this point.
Right.
It's nice, even though, you know, the first two episodes were so like, you know, get a load of these ladies, they stink. But it's slowly turning around where it's a bit more like lovey-dovey, really.
And so they started focusing on Jirina and Class B, but then it extends to the rest of the classes. You know, they go through all the classes and talk about trainees helping each other from Korea and Japan. Even though they can't communicate, they're like drawing like pictures or something. Yeah. And then, like, you know, are you tired? Are you sick or something? Do you need a pill? Kind of thing. which is funny, but, you know, cute. It's cute. It's interesting
it's cute.
And cute.
Yeah.
And kudos, Mnet. I understand what you're doing. I'm sorry that this won't last.
Right. Sorry that this thread
sorry that your actual
ripped apart.
The fans don't give a shit about this, and they're going to tear you apart.
Right, they don't care about this in
they
the long run.
This is nice. This is a nice reel to show your grandparents, and then it's gonna go.
I guess it does at least, you know, to jump ahead a little bit. You know, we do get one more of the Japan versus Korea sort of storyline stuff a little later in the episode, kind of the climax of where we're going to in this edition of Pod 48. So everyone's been rearranged and now we have to choose the center for the Nekoya performance. as you mentioned, anyone in Group A is eligible to get the center position. So they all like gather in the room. That's kind of it's not really an amphitheater, but
it's like a high school. It's like a high school gymnasium.
Good way to put it. Slightly like
with
they
bleachers.
Spent maybe an extra $1,000 to make those bleachers look nice. Mm-hmm. Every Class A person has to do a little performance to Nekoya to basically make their case why they should be the center.
And, you know, some just completely duff it and don't do anything. And then
we don't see a ton of them.
And then some of you are super class president about it, like Lee Gaun, who just like speaks in Japanese and Korean. And it's just like, and then just.
Or also Sakura, who goes the arts and crafts direction to make a little banner that she holds up.
Yeah. Didn't she like try to change the lyrics?
She tried to. She was worried that she wouldn't really be able to sell it. So, but you're right. It's the same thing. Her trying to show her, you know, her Korean skills as well.
Right.
You know, playing to all constituencies here. Uh-huh. Because a very important detail is the determination for who the center will be is from everyone else in Produce 48. So your other B through Fs get to vote.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. This is it's an internal democracy.
Yes. We've shifted. It's a little break from our general, all of Korea is welcome to determine this. We get some inner workings first. Mm-hmm. And we get some good old-fashioned reality show drama to heighten it, because we have ourselves a tie for who should be the center.
Oh, yeah.
Also, quick aside, just to like, I forgot to mention this. You can drop this in earlier. You know, we talked a lot about how Sakura's audition was kind of baffling and like, how
it was fine, but it wasn't like amazing, right?
Right, right, right. It's not A worthy, was kind of what we were going to.
Right.
I will say, I think her reevaluation was pretty good.
Yeah.
And I give her credit. I think that was her earning the A. Glad to see Sakura actually, you know.
I'm sure Sakura got the tape early.
Oh, she probably got it before the show started filming.
Yeah.
Like, she was practicing that before the auditions were even held.
Yeah. If you had asked me when that show aired, like in 2018, if I thought she got the tape, if I thought she got extra help like learning Nekoya, I would be like, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
She had more time or extra lessons. And when I heard that a lot of people got more time, I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. She probably had the tape like before she got to Korea.
Back to the finale here. Sakura is one of the finalists alongside Lee Ka-yoon, who they've tied for votes, apparently. Mm-hmm. Perfect. You know, got to love that in episode 3. You need some drama. And instead of having to do like a, you know, sudden, you know, an overtime sort of situation where they got to dance again or anything, they just make everyone vote on the spot between the two of them. We get some dramatic like, oh, this is why I think Sakura should have it. This is why I think Lee Ka-yoon should be our center for this. It's very like, for something that feels so fake, it ultimately also feels really thrown together.
Like, right. This is also what I talk about, like the carnival game, carny situation, the midway game kind of thing. They have these like elements that make you feel like it's very real and very democratic and natural and organic. But the things that feel organic are like inevitably, like ultimately meaningless. Mm-hmm. And the things that actually matter, like vote results and vote counts and like the math behind it, those are never revealed to anybody. And then when they are finally revealed, they are revealed to be completely false.
To be lies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like here, yeah, we don't know any of the actual tallies. There's no, like, they don't show us, like, Sakura wins 60 to 30 or whatever. It's like, all we see is it hastily coming together. You know, they were writing on clipboards before, but now they're, like, writing on scraps of paper. And we just got to get whatever we have on hand so democracy can happen.
Right.
Sakura wins by what margin we don't know, but hey, she did it. And then we get the Nekoya performance.
Mm-hmm.
We revisit this, we get a little behind the scenes footage of them getting ready for it, you know, their trip to the Mnet studio. And yeah, we get the performance. No major kerfluffles there.
We get the performance. We get like F class dancing their hearts out, even though they can't be on stage, and then getting recognized for that effort a little bit.
Yeah, it's true. Because yeah, for most of this whole thing, they're expecting just to like not be present. And I guess they just look so sad that they're kind of like, okay, you can do your thing on the side. And you know, they do their thing. They're there. That's
Nekoya on Mnet. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's,
and then we have our theme song.
Yeah, we have it, you know. We'll eventually have the sad piano version, which we've already heard.
We've already heard the sad piano version multiple times. I want to talk a couple things more about music in Produce 48 that I love.
Go for it. Go for it.
At the beginning of episode 3, they use a sad piano song. But it is a different sad piano song. And it is A sad piano song of One More Time, One More Chance, which was the song featured in 5 centimeters per second, the Makoto Shinkai film. And I fucking love that. That was amazing. That was amazing to make you nerds feel so sad. Me being a nerd feel so sad in a very specific way. Right?
So good.
Right? Yeah. Just like amazing. Oh.
Alan texted me that thought individually.
I was just like, kind of, what? Oh my god, I forgot they play One More Time, One More Chance, sad piano version. They just straight ripped it from YouTube or something.
Hell yeah, that's how you do it.
They also use a Blink 182 song,
right? There's a lot of, there's Blink 182. There's a few other like oddball choices that pop up.
Oh my god, it's amazing. Again, I think the energy team is still having fun at this point. Or
and Mnet does actually get the camera crew and the, you know, editors, you know, there's some fun little, like, you know, during, I think, the learning process, I think at one point, like, Group B is really excited or something, so they're, like, doing a camera shake thing.
Oh, yeah.
There's all these weird little details that add some nice flavor to the show.
Yeah.
And remind that Mnet is still in control at this moment.
When I heard that 5 centimeters per second song, I was like, really? That's tight. There's this thing recently where there's this like sports documentary where they use the Evangelion theme song.
Yeah.
To show like the Prussian Spring. have you seen that, Patrick?
Yeah, I did. Okay, it was them. Yeah. It was a 2018 documentary about the, I want to say it's the Czechoslovakian gold medalist for the 1998 Nagano Winter Olympics.
The Nagano tapes thing, and they just used the Evangelion theme song. It was the way it was presented to most people. It's like, just like, don't ask, just watch. And we watched it. It was like, dun, 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 dun. So that's what I felt like when I was rewatching this episode and the 5 centimeters per second theme song. I'm like, really? That's tight. One More Time, One More Chance. Perfect song for some of these girls on Prudence 48. I also want to talk about one like specific texture I love from the show, from this episode, is that the Schadenfreude, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right anymore, the Schadenfreude of other girls when some girls get sent down to other classes. I love that when they cut, especially, okay, there's a couple parts. One part is, so there's these two girls from YG Plus, which is a modeling company. Yeah. They're very pretty and very tall, but not very good dancers or singers. But when they got evaluated, one went to F and one went to like D. Mm-hmm. And when they got reevaluated, the one who was in D just got sent down to F, and the other one in F stayed in F. And so there's a scene of her getting sent down to F, and then the other already F girl is in the cutter, and she like laughs. I love that when you just see your teammate, your previously successful teammate, get sent down to your level, and you're just like, huh.
It is nice, honestly.
I think these are really fun.
I can't disagree with that feeling.
On the flip side, you know, there's like the scene where Eunbi gets sent down to C class, and then she's with her other Wulim trainees, and they all cry because she's crying.
Right.
You know, that's sad. But maybe they also feel a little like that's
right inside their hearts. They're singing a song. They're really like, not that much better than us.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my god, so many good reactions, and so many more to come.
We got a lot next. are we gonna talk about next episode? We're talking about we're on to the first real performance stages.
Boombaya or Boombayna? You tell me.
The first round of performances in the show were kind of nutty. That's like where you see your big viral moments. You get your Nako, Yabuki Nako moments. You get your Murase Sai moment. Sai Murase moment, right? That's where she really... we haven't even gotten to anything. She's gotten literally no screen time so far.
Yeah.
And it was
more so than others. We've talked about not getting much screen time. She's especially not had screen time.
This is a funny thing. And I will, I'll just like mention it here real quick and probably cut it. But there's going to be a funny thing where they talk about Korea makeup style versus Japanese makeup style.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, like Korea, like, and like how many very, you know, very obviously attractive AKB members are just benefited way better with some Korean styling.
Yeah.
And me being biased a little bit towards, like, I guess current Korean pop is like agreeing with that front. And it's just like, God, some girls get a fucking glow up, like a crazy glow up when they just get a hairstylist and makeup artist who's not trying to appeal to like an AKB, like not like right, right. ridiculous AKB crowd. Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, literally like, Even like the attractive ones in the audition stage, like I'm thinking about like the the Takeuchi Gotomoi stage, like they play it kind of like gaudy retro, at least their styling, but they kind of have like clown makeup on a little bit,
yeah.
Right? Well, and I'm just like, is this like, are you trying to be clowny? Because the performance is kind of serious.
Trying to be clowny, oh,
right?
No.
Right, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, like, I get like how entertainment girls doing the Celeb 5 stuff. Of course, you're gonna be clowny, right?
Right, right. To them, it's very and like, yeah, this is like we could explore like all the time. It's just with AKB, it is more just like a theater show,
right?
Like, but it is almost borderline play. So it's kind of like
it just doesn't serve like a clown. Like, so many of these girls, right? And then when they get the styling of the Korea, where it's just like, okay, let's like make you look pretty, right? In a, like a Korean sense, I guess. Mm-hmm. And some of them just get the glow. Murase Sai is like, I think the biggest beneficiary of that. And you'll see why. And then, yeah, you'll get, you know, the peekaboo stages with Jirina and Jungiri's little narrative. And then you get the Boombaya fiasco.
Boombaya is the big one. We will get all into that next week.
Which is actually feels like the most constructed thing in the entire show to me, like the most obviously constructed thing. It's the big
we'll
hit.
Get into that.
Yeah. And then, just some of this stuff. Good. So yeah, that was episode 3 in a nutshell. Nekoya in a nutshell.
And so Nekoya, and after Nekoya, we're going to start seeing that, that roller coaster car. It's going to start screeching a bit. It's going to start about to tip over and go off the rails, if you will.
We're going to see
these moments.
You know, there's going to be like, we haven't lost any engines yet.
Yes.
We haven't lost any yet. We got 4 engines.
There's no gremlin on the wing.
No
so
gremlin on the wing. No gremlin on the wing. We're going to see a gremlin on the wing next episode.
Yes.
And then I think by elimination 1, we're going to lose a couple engines.
Just plumes of smoke.
And then by elimination 3, we'll have no wings, no tail, and it'll be spinning.
It'll be the Lost Island,
actually. It'll just be spinning to the sky in 4 dimensions. And
the construct of reality collapses in on itself.
And, you know, Mnet has the console open. They're typing in cheat codes. To like make sure that
help
someone
me.
Survives.
But yeah, thank you so much for listening this week.
Yes, we'll see you soon.
Yeah. All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.